Welcome to All Things Policy, a daily podcast by the Takshashila Institution. We are a bunch of policy nerds based in Bengaluru, and we like bringing fresh perspectives to Indian affairs and Indian perspectives to global affairs. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and join us for today's chat. Hello and welcome to All Things Policy. I'm Manoj Keval Ramani, and today I have with me Shambhavi. And we're going to be talking once again about the coronavirus outbreak, the COVID-19 outbreak in China. Interesting that they call it 19, right? Given that they acknowledged the outbreak in 2020.
Yeah, but didn't China notify WHO in
December 31st? Okay. That gives them some points. Okay, so that's what we're going to be talking about. We're going to be talking about the outbreak. We do this every week where we try and give you a wrap of what's happened with regard to this. This is obviously a major crisis for China, but it's also an international problem. The latest numbers that we have as of recording this podcast on Thursday afternoon is that there are nearly 75,000 cases reported within the mainland China. Within the PRC and Taiwan. The total number is 74,675 cases within that territory, with 2,121 deaths. Internationally, there are about 1,050 cases confirmed with 7 deaths. Shambhavi, what have you been reading on this? How far is this spread?
So what I've been reading about is the biggest outbreak outside of China, which is on the Diamond Princess, which is a cruise liner, which is docked currently in Japan.
Yeah.
Which has been under quarantine for a long time. And now various countries have started evacuating their citizens. So the US sent in people to be evacuated. So this is people who have not tested positive for the virus so far. There was a lot of debate over that as well, because obviously these people have been stuck on a ship for a long time. And then the US said that, oh, we'll come and evacuate you guys. And there was happiness because of that. And then the US said that, oh, but you still have to undergo quarantine once you're back in the US.
Yep.
So then people are like, but you're already under quarantine and we're not showing any signs. So there's some angst there. So I think there were some Americans who had tested positive who have to stay in Japan. Mm-hmm. And then once they feel better after 14-day period, they can actually return. This has obviously cost a lot of money to people as well.
Yeah.
Because people tested on holiday. They did not expect to spend so much time on this cruise ship. So that is one concern. Australia started evacuating people as well. Two people have died on the ship because of the coronavirus.
Okay.
So, and it has spread quite briefly. So this is the biggest outbreak outside of China. People have died in Iran.
Mm-hmm.
So the outbreak seems to have spread there as well.
Yeah.
And then we have it all in Australia. That is pretty surprising, like we are speaking. So because a lot of people said, oh, summer, maybe it won't spread, it will curtail. This is Australian summer.
Yeah, the heat will make sure that the virus doesn't transmit as easily and that sort of stuff, right?
So I don't know whether the 15 cases came infected from outside or whether it spread within Australia, but there are cases that are also there in summertime Australia.
Yeah, so this was also an interesting view because the Chinese National Health Commission released their big report on the virus and, you know, the efforts, and there are lots of interesting details in there. But the other fascinating aspect was that progressively the numbers have fallen.
Yeah.
The other interesting thing is
in Japan, the numbers are increasing.
Yeah.
I think. And Japan, the first thing that people thought was it's because of these cruise ships which are docked there. But now they've found at least 60 cases which are not connected to the cruise ship, so they think it has now spread and is an event on its own.
So that's a scary thing, right? Because I mean, the numbers that I am reading right now, and these numbers are from Caixin, which is a Chinese non-state media outlet. The numbers that they give for Japan right now is 705 cases, which is the highest anywhere else outside China. Mm-hmm. Apart from China, the biggest sort of impact is in ASEAN,
mm-hmm.
With Thailand, Vietnam, these sorts of countries recording double-digit cases. Mm-hmm. And fairly high double-digit cases. But Japan is quite surprising. It's 700 plus.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is one thing that... despite the numbers falling within China and despite the sort of increasing sense that they probably are going to get in control of at least... I mean, do we have a sense that this is peaked right now, or is the peak still somewhere away, or are we just
We can't tell because they keep on changing the diagnostic methods as well.
Yeah.
So we thought last week was, oh my God, this is so bad.
Yeah.
But then they were just doing clinical diagnosis.
Yeah.
And then this week they're back to doing laboratory testing.
Yeah.
Which means that we suddenly see this fall and we're like, oh.
So I mean, I'm not even sure if this current fall is associated with the change in metric, because the change in metric was just announced, you know, just about a day or so ago. So I don't know when this got implemented, and that's unclear again. Because even if you change the metric, testing will take some time.
It will take
for
some
you
time.
Can actually confirm
like
from
at yeah.
least 2 days, right? So that means that if you change it yesterday, which is on Wednesday,
yeah.
the impact will be probably felt from Friday sometime onwards
yeah,
in terms
be.
Of the numbers.
Yeah.
And if they are releasing numbers every morning, let's assume that they change it on Wednesday morning. Friday morning, numbers might not be ready because
yeah.
of bureaucracy. So Saturday morning is
yeah,
when you will
you
actually
might see. A sudden dip in.
So, you know, so don't be surprised if on Saturday you hear 20 new cases or 30 yeah. new cases, because the system will completely change.
Yeah.
I mean, that's something to keep in mind. The other thing to me is sort of politically how all of this is playing out. There was an interesting, there are a couple of interesting developments in China. One is, the party's leading journal, Cheshire, they published a speech given by Xi Jinping on February 3rd to the Politburo. And that's quite an interesting speech, because in that speech, Xi Jinping essentially is saying that on January 7th, when I convened everybody here, I told you guys we need to be containing this outbreak. This is a big outbreak. So he's acknowledging that he knew this at least as far back as January 7th, although the official confirmation from the story that we know happens 18th, 20th January, which is when they start imposing all these quarantine measures. And I mean, there are multiple ways to interpret this. One way is that he's being defensive, where he's saying, look, I did my job. I actually informed people, and these buggers at the lower level did not, you know, provincial leaders did not do it. So this is a failure of these guys, and therefore you need more central control. The other way to look at it is that he now feels confident that we've managed to contain this. So I can impose my authority and say, I was in charge all along. Although you remember in one of the first episodes we recorded, there was this talk of he's made the premier Li Keqiang in charge
yeah,
of this thing. And
yeah.
you know, so there are many ways to approach this thing. And obviously there's no one understanding that one can have as to why this is happening. The other thing is sort of the economic impact.
Yeah.
They've been trying to, I mean, over the last 10 days, Xi Jinping has been saying that, you know, use differentiated measures, because the quarantines can be extremely draconian. I can't think of the gradation in draconian. They can be extremely lightly draconian. No, I guess they're just draconian. He's saying, let's have differentiated measures. If you're not really badly hit, don't go crazy
yeah.
by locking people up in their homes and telling them that they can only come out every alternate day to buy vegetables, or even don't come out, we'll deliver the stuff to your so residential complexes, stay within that. So they're trying to sort of kickstart the economy in one way or the other. But still, you've got the parliamentary session, which might get postponed still. I think there is the executive body of the NPC, which is the People's Congress, is supposed to meet on the 24th of February to discuss the resolution of postponing the NPC session, which was scheduled for, I think, 5th March, but at least the first week of March, that much I'm certain of. So yeah, so interesting times for them politically also. Lots of jockeying going on. But from a health sort of aspect, what are the kind of things that people should now be looking at in terms of, you know, masks, exports, those sorts of things from India are now open. What should be the worry for an Indian from an Indian point of view as things ease up? And let's say as trade sort of opens up again, what are the worries from our point of view?
I think our biggest worry has to be the lax system that we follow. So suppose we do have an outbreak, we do not have the capacity to quarantine the way China has. I'm not even saying that's the correct way of quarantining.
Yeah.
But we don't.
Hmm.
And I still see. I did a critical thinking course yesterday. I did a workshop at a college here in Bangalore, and I was studying these BSc students about how I still see people not wearing masks.
Yeah.
Which I find very surprising, because educated people who can clearly afford a mask are coughing in the metro and on buses and not wearing masks, which really scares me. They were quick to point out that it's probably they feel stigma
yeah.
of wearing a mask. They feel a stigma of being unwell, or that people might be not nice to them. So that is one clear thing that we have to be prepared for it. The other, I think, project likely more to occur is racism towards people. There was reports today about Northeast Indian students who are coming back to college or things like that have been targeted.
Okay.
And that is a bigger fear.
Yeah, that's miserable.
For me.
Yeah. That's miserable. The other thing is that, you know, over the last week, and this has happened in my house, I presume it's probably happened in your houses, there's a conversation about storing and stocking drugs.
Yeah.
You know, paracetamol, certain basic antibiotics and this and that.
There's actually a news report today In Karnataka, we are running out of the raw materials required to make the deworming tablets that are distributed in government schools. Because they come from China.
Yeah. So approximately 70% of 70-75% of API requirements for India are fulfilled from China. And there is, at least we know that this was reported last week, and I had covered it in my newsletter on China. So in case you would like to read more about this, please subscribe to it. But the idea that the government has set up a task force, government of India has set up a task force to look at this dependency, to try and identify what sort of APIs could be hit worse and which are the most essential. And therefore, to try and see what could be the impact in terms of not just shortages, but also prices. Because also, you don't need to have a shortages for price to
go I think prices have already started going up.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like you said, I think a lot of people are thinking about stocking up on
pharmaceuticals. Basic drugs, yeah, I think that is something, I mean, that's a tricky thing to tell people. But yeah, I mean, I would just say that there's no need to panic.
Yeah.
So there's no need to panic, buy or do some things like
that.
If
it helps, because I'm not stocking up on anything.
Yeah?
I'm not stocking up on anything.
Yeah, I mean, we've not stocked up on anything so far, apart from, you know, just having usual basic paracetamol at home, given that it is flu season.
Yeah.
And that beyond that, I don't think there is at the moment any necessary for any alarm.
I have a doctor friend who went to do some community medicine talks the other day about the coronavirus outbreak, and I asked him what kind of questions he received. And a lot of people asked him about whether taking the flu vaccine will help protect from the coronavirus. And we have absolutely no evidence that suggests it will. But it will definitely protect you from flu.
Yeah.
So I would recommend taking it.
Yeah, and see, that's the other thing. You know, we had this conversation in the office a couple of weeks ago where the idea was that if you take the flu vaccine and then you end up having something, having such a problem which shows a symptoms, the likelihood of you having, you know, one of these different infections and the sort of strands of flu that you're vaccinated for is a greater. So at least your diagnosis might become a little bit easier. You know, so that could be the case. But yeah, it's a good idea. And I don't think that really happens, right? I mean, apart from, like, I know that apart from getting my kid vaccinated, I don't necessarily go and get myself vaccinated.
We don't. No, so when I was at the UK, the MRC where I used to work used to pay for everybody's vaccinations.
Yeah.
And so every year we used to get vaccinated for flu, because otherwise it is a loss of 7 to 10 days of your productivity.
Yeah.
So for the MRC, it was an economic decision that we just get everyone vaccinated.
Yeah.
Here we don't see that.
Yeah, I when you say this, I recall my sister who works at the NHS, she gets her annual vaccination.
Yeah.
And then she takes 2 days leave because she gets the annual vaccination. So that's an incentive. So yeah, but I mean, it's a good idea to actually get vaccinated if you can, because it really helps you. And if you can do it annually, it's good, because, you know, usually strands of flu might change.
The strains of flu change every season.
Yeah.
So every season there's a new flu vaccine that you have to take. But I think, so one of the things we saw with the masks, for example, is that a lot of the IT companies are investing in getting masks for all of their employees.
Mm.
Even if they get all of their employees, say, in Bangalore, vaccinated, that would be a great step, because one of the ways the vaccine works is herd immunity. So if out of 10 people, say 8 people have the vaccine and flu is not going to, they're not going to come down with the flu, it increases the likelihood of person number 9 and 10 from also getting the getting flu. So
it can contain things better. Yeah, so it's a good idea. So so one message that we can give out is go get yourself vaccinated. It'll really help. In terms of the vaccine for coronavirus, what's been the work on this? I mean, what's the data on this right now?
So we are still trying to figure out the vaccine, right? I think the latest thing I saw today morning was that we have mapped out the spike protein. So the spike protein is what the virus uses to engage with the host cell and then go and dock itself in.
Okay.
So we have now understood how that structure is. So we can now create a vaccine that will basically block the interaction of the spike protein with the host cell. So it will stop the infection itself from occurring.
Okay, so that's positive news. And that's how far positive. Is this away?
This could take a while.
A while?
We don't have a vaccine for common cold. So you can imagine that this is not an easy thing to do.
Yeah.
I think estimates suggest a few months
for
us to get close to a vaccine.
So vaccine is some time away. We've read about numbers of fatalities. I mean, at the moment, around 2,150. And many, many people cured. Okay, so thousands of people cured. And also the rest, you know, possibly, let's see, that the fatality rate is about 2-2.5% or whatever. What have you been reading about the effects that this virus leaves even after you're sort of cured? I mean, is it that you're cured, you're recovered? I mean, or is there sort of a long-term... For example, in SARS, there was long-term lung damage for many people, right? Depending on the intensity of the infection. So in this, have you been reading anything about the kind of long-term
impacts? No, I've not come across any data. I don't know how this data is even being documented or who has it. Usually, all documentation is going through WHO.
Yeah.
So that is one common repository. But I have not come across the long-term impacts of this. It might just be too soon for them to be releasing data as well. Yeah. The other thing I did read about from a treatment point of view, though, was that they have that particularly in China, the survivors have been asked to come back and donate their plasma.
Yeah.
Because the plasma will contain antibodies against the virus.
Mm-hmm.
And so they are transplanting the plasma into infected patients.
Okay.
So that they can develop a better immunity.
And this has to be done in what time frame? Or can
so
be
that
done?
I think that's a trial and error that they're trying to figure out, because your antibodies will die down after the infection.
Hmm.
So there is a brief window in which you do not have the infection, but you still have the antibodies.
Yeah.
So you have to get the survivors in that time window.
Yeah.
And I think they're also using this only on like the highly critical people.
Yeah.
To help boost their immunity to fight.
Yeah. You know, when you talk about that, it sort of, I've sort of brushed aside the idea that they've created all these hospital capacities, which we saw this massive construction that was being live streamed. And today they say they've got about 40,000 bed capacity in Wuhan instead, that they've upgraded right now. And there's lots of discussion about, and justifiably so, about the initial cover-up and those sorts of things, which is obviously all that happened. And then the subsequent transparency and the quarantines and the rights issues associated with the quarantines, and not just the rights issues, but also the effectiveness, right? Because quarantines could actually mean you lock people in certain environments and the virus can actually spread and it can actually cause more cases in that environment. So the probability of me being quarantined in an environment and being absolutely healthy, but unfortunately falling sick because I'm quarantined.
Yeah.
Could be very, very hard. And those are sort of tragic stories that we are already seeing. Like there was a story this week about a family of four in China who essentially everybody contracted with each other because of the quarantine. So you will see such stories. And all of these are, in their own sort of means, an important component of this larger story. But it's something to be said if you look at a systemic level for a healthcare system to respond this way, for a system to actually respond this way and to actually deal with this. I mean, if one can, it's difficult to sort of disassociate efficiency and effectiveness from the sort of political rights and all those dynamics. But if I can do that, you know, for a moment in my brain, I'd say it tells you something about the efficiency of that system and the quality of the healthcare system to be able to do that. And that's not a paper tiger.
No, I think they have managed to do extremely well, assuming that they have been transparent completely since the time they've
been transparent. All of this assuming that the data makes sense.
Yeah, I think we still have a while to go to figure out exactly what the burden of disease was and how it has been tackled with, and how citizens from China are actually taking all of these measures in.
Yeah, there's also a mental health component to all this, right? I mean, being in this environment must be really playing havoc with people's minds.
So like all of these Netflix, etc. Well, not in China.
Yeah.
Whatever is a Chinese equivalent, their sales must have gone up because people are sitting at home. It's one of the things that I really wonder at times, right? So if something like this was ever to happen in India, what would I do sitting at home?
Yeah.
And I really don't have an answer. I think I'll just go bonkers.
Yeah, no, I'm sure. Yeah, and particularly if you're trapped and you can't get out, and you're also worried about getting out and engaging with people, even your community.
Yeah,
it's quite a strange situation to be in. It's a terribly sort of dystopian, isolated world that you will end up in, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a scary, scary thing. This sort of one other point from all of that I wanted to sort of highlight is that for the last 10 days, we've been hearing about. So last week, I think we spoke about this, right? No, or maybe we didn't speak about this, but Prime Minister Modi wrote a letter to Xi Jinping. Expressing solidarity and, you know, so on and so forth. And then it was reported that India is going to be sending supplies. These supplies were supposed to go over either Friday last or over the weekend. They haven't. Then it was said they would be going this week. And the idea was that, and there were sort of some more details, right? India is sending a C-17 jet, an IAF jet, filled with supplies. And there might be spaces for people to be evacuated. So people who want to get evacuated can contact the Indian embassy and so on and so forth. And this is all going to Hubei. Again, there's been sort of a news report today. So from the Indian journalist in China, from the Hindustan Times, he reported that this has been delayed due to technical issues. Now, I'm not sure what the technical issues are. Whether they are a case of us not being able to get our act together, or whether it's about Wuhan airport and those sorts of things. But it's quite something that many other countries have been able to provide support, have been able to capitalize on this as a, not just as a humanitarian thing, but also as a soft power opportunity.
Yeah.
Whereas we've been very slow to act on this.
Yeah. We have not shown any lead in actually leveraging the opportunity. I mean, there's a lot I think we could have done right from the beginning. That India has just not. And I really don't understand why not.
Yeah, it just seems like one of those things that we've not paid attention to the fact that this could be something that we could gain from.
Yeah, and I mean, not even from gain from it. This is happening in our backyard. We need to stop this. We need to help efforts to stop this from spreading, because if it moves faster, it's going to come to us.
Yeah.
So it just doesn't make sense on how little interest we have shown.
I want to take that argument a little bit further. And I remember that you had sort of talked about this in some of our internal conversations, that the fact that India provides support is not just about, oh, we are helping the Chinese, but is also your first line of defense from the virus coming here.
Yeah.
Could you sort of expand on that idea a little bit?
Yeah, so I mean, what I got really angry about was this mask ban.
Hmm.
We banned all PPE because we wanted to make sure that we have enough stocks within India. And it makes sense, right? If the outbreak had come to us, we would have needed stocks.
Yeah.
But we have the manufacturing capacity that could have been incentivized. Because what we really need to make sure is that the thing doesn't go out of China.
Yeah.
And so if we say that, no, we are not going to give you masks at all, let it spread within your country, that makes no sense at all. I mean, that was one part. And the other part was that this was an opportunity to really incentivize our manufacturers for all of the Make in India stuff. This is it. I mean, if there's one thing India manufacturing needs, is Chinese manufacturing has been stopped for the past many weeks.
Yeah.
And now that it's coming back online, we have lost that window.
Yeah. Yeah. So again, that's a possibly sort of myopic short-term view of what the crisis could entail for India.
And it's also like we have done pretty well containing outbreaks in the recent past.
Yeah.
We saw it with Nipah. Kerala again did stellar work with the coronavirus. The three Wuhan patients from Wuhan who had come, the students. We need to show a little bit more confidence in our own health measures.
Yeah. Okay. So with that, I think we're good enough for today. Again, we've tried to talk about all the major issues that are associated with this virus. And hopefully we've given you some sense of what are the kinds of things that you can expect going forward in the next week or so. Thank you so much, Ambavi.
Thank you, Manoj.
If you liked our show, don't forget to check out other interesting podcasts on the IVM network. You can tune into them on the IVM Podcast app, ivmpodcast.com, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow IVM on social media. The handle is @IVMPodcasts on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And hey, if you'd like to dive into Takshashila's research on technology, strategy, and economic affairs, check us out at our Twitter handle @TakshashilaInst or our website, takshashila.org.in.